Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Pounders moving forward. Drop a couple of George Michael or Wham songs, as today would have been George Michael's 55th birthday.
Yeah, I can do that.
And no bigger George Michael fan than one Susan St. John.
I was going to say my mother was a giant George Michael fan.
Right.
Giant. Loved the guy.
So 55?
He would have been 55, yeah. And we all...
Well, I would have guessed much older.
We all enjoy Careless Whisper whenever it's played in any sporting event.
Fantastic saxophone.
You got to have faith if you're a Royals fan.
Wake me up.
Doing, yeah, that's right. That's the best one.
I always loved his Sunday night show, the George Michael Sports Machine. Tremendous show.
Wrong one. Wrong one.
Nate.
Wrong one. That guy's like 90.
What?
He passed away.
That's not the same guy?
No.
Yes. Neither one is living.
But the buttons, who's pushing the buttons now?
You know
the
what?
Sports Machine, get all the
you
highlights.
You are. You are, buddy.
Is this the Sports Machine?
Yeah, this is the Kansas City Sports Machine.
Let's change the name of the show. It's the Kansas City Sports Machine. I'm pushing the buttons. Let's check out the highlights of the Royals.
Yeah. Underrated voice of our time, I say.
Machine's broken, by the way.
For George Michael.
try to look for the Royals highlights. Machine is not working.
So, I take it you're not, with your smart-ass remarks, not a fan of George Michael, Nate.
No, I do. Actually, I like George Michael.
That's all right.
What was it? What was his shirt? Choose Life. Wasn't that what it said on his shirt in this video?
I can't remember.
Leave it on that side of it. Sam Melody
was a part of Wham, wasn't it?
Sam's ready. Yes.
Yeah. Wham.
With Andrew Ridgely.
Whammy.
Oh, I could have never guessed the other guy in Wham.
Why not? They were an iconic duo. For a while.
What a good song.
I always thought it was George Michael and the other guy.
How would you like to know that in grade school, two different talent shows, me and Big Tom Ragusa, of Dominic's Casual Italian fame now, on 64th Street, and one of my best friends ever. We performed two lip-sync songs for the talent shows, complete with outfits and everything. One was To All the Girls I've Loved Before, and I was Julio Iglesias, and he had the pigtails and everything. He was Willie Nelson. We did that in 7th grade.
Nice.
And then, I believe in 8th grade, we did Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
So, how about that?
A little dancing. You see Tom up there dancing and everything. Oh, yeah.
No, I really can't.
I like to get in the... He's a good dancer. I like to get in the talent shows. Sam Mellinger. But...
I dressed up as a pop artist twice in my young life.
Let's hear it.
It was George Michael and Michael Jackson.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So, with the George Michael... like
Faith...
Yeah, definitely leather faith. Jackets, stonewashed jeans, mirrored sunglasses, hair slicked back. I bet you were rocking that look.
Faith and Thriller, baby.
Why don't you bring that back?
Wow.
No?
I dressed up as Mick Jagger and did a lip sync to Start Me Up when I was in high school.
If anybody listening has that video, please.
I'd like to see that.
Please send that. That would be amazing.
Right. How much have you watched the World Cup? Be honest with us, please.
A fair amount. Not every game. But a fair amount.
Have you enjoyed it?
I have. Absolutely. Love the World Cup.
Who are you rooting for?
I don't.
Be careful.
You know, I really don't.
That's the wrong answer. That's the absolute wrong answer.
Yeah.
On this show, it's the wrong answer.
You just made Jake mad.
And I will cut you.
Whoa. Hey.
That's an inside joke.
It's an inside joke.
Oh, boy.
I liked it. I liked it, Jake.
You can come out to Port Fonda on Wednesday for our big World Cup watch
week.
Party. Yes.
I'll tell you who I'm not rooting for is Russia.
Okay, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
Connell, the Irish intern, sent me a some sort of statistical graphic breakdown that I didn't understand at all, but basically alleging that the Russians are performing well in this World Cup because they are doping, and their players are covering more ground and exhibiting more fitness than any other players in this World Cup. And since, like, every Russian sports team has, like, been convicted of institutional, you know, performance-enhancing drugs, that's what the allegation is now on the Russian team, that they're cheating, and that's why they're winning. So,
Nate, Katie, that is exactly why I said what I said. I saw that same thing. I say this without any evidence. And I say this publicly on a radio station, but this is you. This is on you guys, not me. But I believe that 100%.
Of course. We all saw the documentary Rocky IV. We know what they're up to. We've seen it. I mean, Connell McCourt sent me this. It's statistically proven as far as I'm concerned. That's all I need to know.
Yeah.
I mean, really, would it surprise anyone if it came out later, like, oh, yeah, the Russians, like, instituted some entire, you know, doping scheme for their players?
It'll surprise me if it doesn't.
So, like, where were they ranked in the FIFA rankings? Like, how good are they? What was
they were considered the second worst team in this World Cup, honestly.
Really?
Ahead of Panama?
Yeah. No, like way behind Panama.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but I do you think that's, I mean, realistically,
no,
Nate,
the world, look, the, right, the rankings, the rankings are a joke.
They're,
I mean, look, Poland was ranked sixth,
but they're sponsored
Poland
by Coca-Cola.
Ranked,
so I don't,
that's true,
but no, we can't go off those rankings.
Okay, so that's what that, but so here's the deal, you say that people don't understand,
right,
that they're listening, so,
and that's
why
we're saying that,
but why are they a joke?
Well,
they're
one
trying
thing,
to
it's,
rectify
it's,
it.
Well, it's for one thing, it's incredibly difficult, if not altogether impossible, to figure out who the best teams in the world are, because, you know, until you get to the World Cup, these teams don't play one another very often, if ever, in a winner take all type situation. You're playing in your region, and it's really hard to tell which region is the best. And there's a lot of different variables. Like right now, you watch Panama play, or you watch Costa Rica play at this World Cup, and you go, God, that team's not very good. I mean, look at them. But you go try to play at Costa Rica. And I don't know if you guys heard the story that, like, Matt Beisler told. When the United States men's national team was playing in Costa Rica, the Costa Rican radio station figured out what time the bus was trying to drive to the stadium for practice, and everybody literally parked their cars on the highway for 4 hours so that the American bus couldn't get to the stadium. So literally, like, remember that story, Stephen? Like, the American players are sitting on a bus for 4 hours, like, trying to figure out how they're going to go to the bathroom and all this stuff. And so, like, Costa Rica's not that great of a team, but playing in Costa Rica makes it seem like they're a great team. They crank out results there that make you go, wow, they must be really good.
Okay, so Russia's ranked 70th in the FIFA rankings.
They're not a very good team. I mean, they have not been good for quite some time. They had a decent team about 6 or 7 years ago, but they haven't been good for quite some time. But, you know, they play they're, for one thing, they're in the worst qualifying group of, I mean, they may be the worst group in World Cup history. So they've, you know, taken advantage of a couple of other bad teams. Some people think that the Saudis were literally paid off by the Russians to play as horribly as they did in the first game.
Now
Saudi Arabia was considered the worst team in the entire World Cup going in. So it's hard. Like, the rankings are difficult. But they're also very flawed.
Panama's,
you know, in the way that they're compiled. Yeah. So
15 spots ahead of Russia.
Yeah. So. And Panama might not have the same, you know, juice that the Russians have right now.
Oh, I get
Although,
it.
A quick aside, guys, did you see the footage of the Panamanian fans celebrating the goal they scored in their 6-1 loss the other day?
Yes.
I thought that was really cool. I mean, like, look, they're getting slaughtered. This is the first time their country's ever been in. It's a tiny little country. It's the first time they've ever been in the World Cup. They scored a goal, a meaningless goal, but it was the first goal in their country's history, and they went crazy. Their fans went nuts, and I thought that was a pretty cool sight.
Yeah,
you know?
Let's celebrate being a loser. That's great.
Salvador Perez is not happy with that celebration, guys.
He wasn't?
No.
Are you making a joke, or is that true?
No, I'm just making a joke.
I don't think Jake's very happy with that celebration, though.
No, it
sounds like it.
No. It's so. But I like Sam's joke better.
Right.
But, sure, great. I enjoy watching every one of England's celebrations on their goals, though.
No, those are good.
That's what I like.
It seems like people are being harmed in every one of those celebrations.
It's like there's someone.
No,
getting,
seriously. Oh, I mean, they need to have stretchers on standby. Yeah. Yeah. All hell breaks loose.
Yes.
It's someone that's like, that looks great, but I would not want to be there.
I would not.
Like, sometimes these celebrations, well, I'd like to be there. That's awesome. I would not want to be there.
I wouldn't want to be on that block.
It's very painful, right?
Anywhere
but
near
they
it.
Continue to celebrate.
It's Sam Mellinger to watch.
Is in the studio. We had a celebration like that when the Royals won a game on Friday. People were running the streets.
Oh, man, jumping up and down.
Tell us about the budding superstar that is Rozell Herrera.
Fun, right?
See, now thank you. Because I wanted to see him play ahead of Orlando and of Almonte, because I don't know what the point is, especially, like, I lost it last week when they had both Orlando and Almonte in the same lineup.
Yeah.
And, like, Mondesi's on the bench. Like what's the point of this?
100%. Like,
don't do this.
Yes.
Let's see this kid.
I'll tell you this. When I saw the Royals picked up some guy off waivers who I'd never heard before, off waivers from the Reds, like, I almost, like, wrote something very smart-ass and, you know, like,
right.
this is where the Royals are.
Wait, you?
I know. It was, you know, it was late at night, Jake. But you can see what they see. You know what I mean? Like, a switch hitter, lots of energy, you know, seems athletic, into the game, competes, like, all that stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Guess what? Teams make mistakes about players.
Yes.
All the time.
We've seen the Royals do that on occasion, right? And look, like, Rozy Herrera is, I just got this in front of me, 6 of 27. He's hitting .220 to .250 on base. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on him being the next Lorenzo Cain or whatever, but my God, like, there's a reason to watch a game. There's a fun player. You know, there's a guy with energy, with potential, with, you know, sort of ambition, if I can use that word. I mean, hell, maybe they got something. Like, if they come out of this season with 100 and however many losses, but they also come out of this season with Brad Keller and with a package of prospects for Kelvin Herrera, with maybe a decent prospect for Mike Moustakas, with, you know, some of what they're going to get back in these trades, but they also find a guy like Rozy Herrera. They, you know, find a guy like Brad Keller. You know, Danny Duffy gets his stuff figured out, like, going forward. Jacob Junis figures out, like, you know, how to get some more depth in a slider again and not give up so many home runs. If they just come up with these few things, these few stepping stones, it's not a lost season. I don't care if they lose 95 or 115 games. Like, you know, those are the signs of progress that you look for when you have kind of a BS baseball team.
In my argument for Herrera was not that I think he could be the next center fielder of the future for the Royals, but he could play all the outfield positions. He could play left, center, and right. He's played third base and second base and shortstop in the minors. When you look at his numbers, yes, he's 25 years old, but you're just looking for things as to why the Royals would be interested in giving him a shot. Mm-hmm. In 2017 at AAA, he had a .351 on base, and he stole 20 bases, and that's in 320 at-bats. The year before, AA, he had a .374 on base percentage, and he stole 36 bases, and again, playing multiple positions all over the diamond, offering you energy, offering you enthusiasm, and be honest with you, look like he wants to be there.
Yes.
And wants to win. And for me, there is some value there. If you could find a utility guy off the bench, they could be a pinch runner, they could play all three outfield positions, they could play short, they could play third base. Give me one of those guys on the team as opposed to an Almonte or an Orlando, and I'll watch that. That's a reason to watch. And like you said, even if they don't find an everyday player out of him, if they find a useful piece off the bench, a utility guy, they could, who knows, utility guys bring value. Maybe he turns into a trade chip a year or two from now. I'll watch him as opposed to, and that was my argument last week.
Yes.
Don't roll Orlando and Almonte. There's no point in that.
Yes. And Orlando just got sent down. But yeah, I mean, I think, like, you just touched on this, but that is a dead team walking. And this is not accusatory toward anybody on that roster, because human nature is that if you're on that team with that record in this situation where the good players are getting traded, and you know you're on a bullet train toward 100 losses, you're not going to be into it as much as you were in 2014 and 2015. And just to see this sort of, you know, injection of some energy, and I, you know, maybe we're, like, overplaying Rozy Herrera right now. We probably are, like, if we think about what we're going to know in 3 months or 4 months or whatever. But this is right now. And if the Royals just kind of found a potential, even if he's a fourth outfielder, like right. if that's all he is,
a utility guy,
that's a win. That is an absolute win.
And on Friday night, I watched a game where Duffy pitched really well.
Yeah.
Herrera robbed a home run and drove in the only run with a triple.
Yep. That was a fun game to watch.
That about got me 3 months of playing time for him.
They kept getting into trouble and out of trouble, like what in the you know, fifth inning, sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning. Tim Hill comes in for the save, right? That was a fun game. That was just like this, you know, in this just drudgery of you know, just a bad, old, ambitionless, you know, sort of pointless team.
Right.
It was just like this island of, wow, that was a really fun game to watch. Oh, I'm into that.
You got to search for stuff because that was like a Border Patrol special because I wanted to see Herrera play more, and he did that. Uh-huh. And then Bluma, he's the only guy that I know that said that. I asked almost everyone last week, okay, and of course every answer was a smart-ass reply. Do they even need a closer? So who should the Royals' closer be? Got to win games first. I get it. Yes, it may not be a job that is called upon very often in the second half. Right. But and Ned Yost even mentioned his name, but Jamie Bluma said, I'd give Tim Hill a shot.
Yeah.
And who knows how that's going to work out. But Tim Hill comes in, closes the game, pitches a perfect inning. And so that was fun to see just to make Bluma look good. Nate Eucati, your thoughts on what we're talking about?
Yeah, I like Rozel Herrera as well, like you guys. I like his energy. I don't expect him to be some, you know, regular for the Royals when they're ready to compete again, but might as well take a look at him. And I think in a team like this, when the team's losing like crazy, you might as well give him a young guy that's got a ton of energy, relatively young, that's got the chance to go out there and play every day. As for the closer part that you bring up, it's hard for me to come up with an answer to that one because literally nobody excites me. Like there's not a pitcher in the bullpen that makes me go, oh man, I really want to see this guy get a chance to do the job. I know Peralta was tickling the upper 90s on the radar gun the other day and the extra innings loss. There's some guys that throw hard in the bullpen, but I don't see anyone that I think of as like, oh, that guy could be the closer of the future. Do you guys?
No,
not really. I mean, I think that if everybody sort of this is sometimes how I think about it anyway, on a team like this, if everybody reaches their ceiling, I think Jason Adam actually has like some closer in him when his pitches are right. He gets a lot of strikeouts and that kind of thing. I don't know how realistic that is. And part of why I'm saying that is I think that if everybody reaches their ceiling, Tim Hill may be more valuable. And maybe I'm just like typecasting him because he's a lefty and you know, his delivery and all that. But he may be more valuable, you know, seventh, eighth inning situationally, you know, to get a key left-handed hitter out. So anyway, I'm still intrigued by Jason Adam long term, but I know there's been some bumps in the road there. But, you know, if he's young enough, if everybody reaches their ceiling, I think he could do that job for a year or two.
I almost got punched in the mouth because I told Jake, if I mention this guy anymore as far as future plans, I want him to come in here and punch me in the mouth. And I almost said it. And it used to be Kyle Zimmer. I'd say, you know what, maybe if they could just turn him into reliever and get an inning at a time out of him. And so now, here we go. Here's the new guy that I always say that about.
Yeah.
Well, if they could just get this Nate Karns back. He could be a candidate for a closer. But then I told Jake if I mentioned him, punch me. So
yeah.
I stopped before I legitimately said it, so I don't.
I still get a punch you.
Did you what you saw at a Mauer?
No.
No.
Who?
No. No.
Who?
Okay. I know a few things that I say from
here on out about the Royals are going to be serious.
No, but I mean, I'm sorry. But I mean, like, was that like the most predictable?
Yes.
Like when he comes to the game, I go, well, here we go. Like I don't know what. I mean, I guess he pitched well for a stretch at AAA, but I mean, you talk about a guy that just keeps getting chances. And again, this is the time to do it. I guess if you really think a guy has something in his arm that you love, and
yes. This
is the time for evaluation to try to. But boy, he's just pissing away chances left and right, isn't he?
The time and place to try weird stuff is the 2018 Royals. I present to you center fielder Alcides Escobar.
Right. Were you thrilled with that?
No. But I mean, like, whatever. Like, who cares?
I'd rather watch that than the Orlando Almonte. I don't know. Because I like the fact that they're going to go to all these great lengths to keep this consecutive game streak alive. Like, you see, wait, he's not playing shortstop up center field. Ooh,
yeah,
well, okay then. Yeah. And then he goes 2-for-2 with two walks.
He was great that day. Yeah, he was great.
Like, that's the kind of center fielder we need.
Yeah, taking walks. Like, I mean,
so they're just not going to—they're not going to let the streak die. Are they?
Never, never. But I mean, you know, if it means that Mondesi can play short, right? See, it's not like they're not benching Lorenzo Cain.
I don't know why, but I like the idea of him playing center field.
That
game on Friday had everything for me.
It really was great, wasn't it?
That was that.
It was the most interesting game of the season.
Yeah, at least. You know what? Probably the entire season, because I was highly entertained. I saw different things happening. Yeah. Eskies running. What if somebody had told you that, like a couple of months ago?
Tim Hill gets the save. Yeah,
the Royals are going to win a game, a 1-0 game in Houston. Duffy's going to be lights out. Okay, I get it. Tim Hill's going to get the save. Rosell Herrera will be the defensive and offensive hero, and then Eskie will be patrolling center field
and on base four times.
I think Jake just came back from Denver and like, what are you talking about, dude? Nate. Is Eskie your center fielder of the future by any chance?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Get him out there, man.
Well, he's out there.
Put him in center.
He's ready to go, and so maybe they're going to try to turn him into a utility guy.
Well, I think I just feel like they're trying to do him a favor and allow him to try to show other major league teams he could be a utility player so that he can try to extend his career in the future. You know, it seems to me like that's what they're doing with him. You know, he's not going to make it as – I don't think anybody's going to try to sign him as a shortstop after this year. So the Royals, to me, they try to take care of their players, you know, especially the guys that have been with them through the championship years. And it seems to me like they're trying to do him a solid. You know, let's see if he can rebrand himself because he wants to keep playing baseball.
If he does not get hurt, will the streak stay alive until the end of the season?
No.
You think that eventually he'll be taken out of the lineup?
I have faith.
A healthy scratch?
I don't know why. I have faith. Yes, I think a healthy scratch.
There's so many positions he can play, though.
I think the streak of games played, I could see that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like defensive replacement, pinch hitter, okay.
Well, now he can play the outfield.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of positions.
Mentioned third. Yeah. Right. I mean, the fact is, like, if you can play shortstop in the big leagues, you know, it's just like any other level. If you can play shortstop, you can probably play the other positions as well. On, you know, at some level. So, but whatever. Yeah, I do think that he'll continue to play, but they got to sit him at some point because, like, otherwise they're just. What are we doing?
See, you say that, but I don't think so.
Like, everybody knows what you're doing, like, for this streak that really doesn't matter to anybody except for two people. Alcides Escobar and Ned Yost. I think it's important to those two.
I wonder how much it matters.
Probably Eskie's agent.
Right. Yeah, maybe Eskie's agent more than Eskie.
Yeah.
Right?
It gives him something because like all the other guys on the champ that were like fixtures on the championship team, there's like some superlatives you can really point to, and I guess he had his great moments. You know, like he was great in the 2015 run up to the postseason and in the postseason.
Yeah, ALCS.
But for the most part, those other guys like have like offensive numbers or pitching numbers that they can point to in their career. And for Escobar, like that's kind of his legacy, I think, is, man, that guy was a gamer. He played every day. He went out there every day. So it's like it's something for him to hang his hat on. And I'll be honest, like I don't want to see him play over Mondesi, I guess. Mondesi could have a chance of being part of the future. But there's a lot of other guys on this team that I'm not dying to see play either. So if they want to keep running him out there in some position, it doesn't really bother me that much because I don't feel like he's blocking anybody that I'm really incredibly excited to see.
Let's take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jake Pounders.
Stephen St. John.
Jake Pounders, the goalkeeper for the Border Patrol here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The gatekeeper.
What is your level of excitement or admiration or anything, and I want to speak for you, the fact that the keeper for Egypt today becomes the oldest player in World Cup history when he lines up for Egypt against Saudi Arabia at the tender age of 45 years old.
It's fantastic.
Can you imagine doing that when you're 45 years old?
You know what? Maybe I can make a run at maybe open tryouts for Sporting or something.
Where are we at right now? How old are you now? How old are you, young man?
I'm 38.
So 7 years from now.
What year is it?
We think he's around that age.
What year is it?
When we found him, things were a little unclear. And so,
is it 2018?
We found some markings behind his ear and some other stuff.
Leave that alone.
Yeah, we counted the rings around his trunk, and we think that he's
38.
But in all honesty, I mean, 45 years old to be doing anything at that level.
Right. No, and that. But the thing is, goalkeepers hit their prime way later than the field players, right. Well, I'm still waiting for my open tryout for Sporting. Maybe I could be part of Swope Park Rangers or, you know, be embarrassed that way. But yeah, so you see goalkeepers, you know, hitting their prime in their mid 30s, you know, and you see them stick around a lot longer. And a lot of that comes with the position is so unique to experience lends itself. It's way more important than, mm-hmm. your actual physical fitness, almost, because you can make up for that with angle play or just veteran positioning, you know, putting yourself in the right place at the right time. You can save yourself a lot of energy and make up for what you lose in quickness and foot speed or whatever. You can make up with smart positioning, and you're exposed in other parts of the field, pretty much every other part of the field. When you start to lose this step, when you start to lose that quickness and speed, you are completely exposed in the game of soccer. But the goalkeeper position, you're not, because it's just such a unique position. I think you can see that in hockey a little bit too. But
so basically you're saying your best years are ahead of you.
I think so. I really think so. With the clean living that I'm doing now, I think I'm about to hit my prime.
Nate Bucati, before we get back to Sam Mellinger and talk about a recent column he wrote about the Royals being historically bad, let's hear from you again. Where are you right now, Nate?
I am at the 37th annual Balls Charity Golf Tournament. You can probably hear people gathering behind me. I just enjoyed a delicious breakfast burrito.
Wow.
As everybody gets ready to go hit the links here. We've given away 5 of our prizes already by people who have come up to us and said swordfish. But we still have a $100 gift card to the Deuce Golf Club Pro Shop. We have two $50 Hen House gift cards to give away. We've got a couple of sets of a dozen Callaway golf balls to give away as well. So if you come out here to the National and say swordfish to Rudy, you can win one of those prizes. But they're raising money for the KVC, which is a fantastic organization for foster children here in the Midwest and all across the region. Last year, this tournament raised $245,000, and they're looking to beat it again this year.
All right, so let's talk to Sam about a column he wrote just a few days ago. Not just bad, but historically so, how the Royals can eventually laugh at 2018. And if you don't laugh, then you will cry. Some of the things that you included in your column, Sam.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
Okay. Royals pitchers ranked dead last among all 30 teams in ERA, hits, runs, earned runs, home runs, and strikeouts.
Yeah.
That pretty much covers it.
Yep.
That's good. Royals hitters rank last or next to last among 15 American League teams in runs, home runs, walks, slugging, and OPS. And you mentioned that no group of hitters has been so thoroughly outranked by its peers since the 2011 Mariners, and no group of pitchers has been so thoroughly outclassed since the 1970 White Sox, led by Tommy John before he had surgery.
Yeah.
Let
me say, like, when I was going through all those numbers, I was like, you know, once I got to the 80s, I'm like, come on, somebody.
So it was
like,
way
I'm
worse
just
than you
tired
thought.
Of, yeah. like, looking through this stuff. You know? I'm
what
hungry.
Did I get myself into?
I need a sandwich. Right. Yeah,
114 losses. They're on pace for that, which would be the sixth most going back to 1871 and the most since 2003 when the Tigers lost 119. I mean, so this,
yeah.
even the Royals fans that have watched all those bad teams, you
it's
know,
never
over the
been
years,
like this.
This is... Really? How did it get this bad?
Well, there's a lot. And I'm doing some math right now. That has not changed, that 114 losses. They are still on pace after going, you know, 1-2 over the weekend. They are still on pace for 114. There's a lot that went wrong, right? Basically, every decision, with the exception of Rosie Herrera, every decision that the Royals have made since the parade has backfired, whether there was sound logic behind it or not. They also, and you know, this is something that I've said on your show a bunch and written in the paper a bunch, but it was, I just think it was a fundamental mistake to not get this rebuild started a year earlier, at least a year earlier. Because if you do that, you stock your farm system a little bit more. Plus, you start the clock earlier. I just think this could have been sped up a little bit. But they've also been the same way that, 2015 Royals and any other team that wins a World Series, I believe this firmly, you can't just be good. You have to be good and lucky. To be this bad, you can't just be bad. You have to be bad and unlucky. And they've had that, too. I mean, the most obvious example is your star catcher, tears knee ligaments the day before opening day with a, battle with his suitcase.
That's when we all should have known.
Yes. Yes.
On that day.
And then and also they've got good play. Like, Danny Duffy is a good pitcher. Danny Duffy has been he was great on Friday, but for the most part has been terrible this season. And he's a good pitcher. He's a good player. It's not just you can't just be bad. You need to be bad and get a lot of rotten breaks, and the Royals have done everything that it takes to lose a lot of games. They've also, sort of lost a lot of games that were winnable, opening day. They've had some games like the Reds come in here and shut them out, basically shut them down for three games. The Reds are a terrible team. The Reds, especially their pitchers, that is a terrible team.
And so, but you also write that the Royals internally, they feel like they can cut the length of this rebuild significantly when compared to what they started in 2006. And I'll say, when I look at this team, and maybe I have to go back and really look at these other teams of 2006 and prior to that, but it feels like they have more talent, but the results aren't there. And like we said, this could be the worst Royals team of all time when you look at record and all these other superlatives that you went through. But why do they think that it won't take as long to rebuild this team compared to what they had in 2006?
Yeah, so let me start by saying I don't necessarily agree with them. But their beliefs on this are, a lot of it's optimism, right? Some of it is experience. But they also, and I do wholeheartedly agree with them on this point, that what they took over in 2006 was, just the infrastructure, if you can use that term, the infrastructure of the organization was a broken mess. Just an absolute broken mess. And the lack of talent, and in 2006, correct me if I'm wrong, they had, when Dayton took over, they had Zach Greinke. I think he was still on hiatus, but Zach Greinke quickly came back. Billy Butler was in the system, and Alex Gordon was in the system.
Right.
The rest of the system was trash. But they at least had these three guys, that played various, roles in the, in the rebuild.
But it sounds bad now, but Butler and Gordon were building blocks and were good baseball players.
They were really
players.
Good players. People can poo-poo that or whatever, but they
All-stars.
Were really good players. Yes, Alex Gordon for a period of 3, 4, 5 years was the best left fielder in baseball. Billy Butler for a period of a few years was one of the, if not the best, right-handed hitter in the American League.
And he was a big part of the 14 team.
Yes, and sure. Zach Greinke in 2009 was, as good as a starting pitcher has been, in the 21st century. And he brought back Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, and a key piece in what turned out to be the Will Myers / James Shields / Wade Davis trade. So anyway, the infrastructure, what I'm trying to say, the infrastructure of the organization is in much better shape than it was in 2006. They have a presence in Latin America that brought them the artist formerly known as Raul Mondesi. they have a presence now. They're spreading into Asia. They're spreading into Europe. They're trying to, those are things that they just didn't have in 2006. They have, an organizational competency, from this is basically the same leadership that turned 2006 into a championship. And look, it took longer than it should have. I think we all agree with that. But they did it. And I think they just have, some sort of, if I can use this term, like an institutional confidence that they can do it again. Again, I'm not sure I agree with them. I do think that the infrastructure is better, but I think that there's a certain energy that can come from desperation of 2006, and that's something, that's just a human nature thing, and reasonable people can disagree with me on that. And they also don't have three prospects like Greinke, Gordon, Butler that they did in 2006.
And I'll leave it with this. The rotation in 2006, the major league rotation, And this just is based on who made the most starts, because there were a lot of guys with 10 starts, yeah. 9 starts.
It's bad.
Oh, no. Listen to Nate's reaction when we say these names. Here is your rotation for 2006. Mark Redman, Scott Ellerton, Ronelvis Hernandez, Luke Hudson, and Odalis Perez. And here are their ERAs, and they all had at least 12 starts. 571, 534, 648, 512, and 564. And with Nate's favorite, at closer, Ambiorix Burgos. So.
That was before he murdered someone.
Well, that,
it's manslaughter, Nate.
All-star Mark Redman.
Before he killed someone. Well, sorry. With his car.
He was a closer at that point.
We pride ourselves on the facts here.
We got to take a step back now. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WH. I was just discussing the Westworld finale with Ty Lebo. Old Dum Dum didn't watch the end of credit scene. He don't know what's going on.
Oh,
no.
How'd you screw
dummy?
That up?
I can't believe it. Oh, wow.
So, you messed up.
And then he comes in here and chastises Sam Ellinger for not watching Westworld. He goes, oh, all he cares about is sports.
Shame on you for caring about your job. Shame on you for doing your job.
Did you like being ridiculed by Todd?
It's amusing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Let's invite Nate Ducati back into the equation. Nate says he wants to hear more about the 2006 Royals. No, Nate. We've already had enough of it, all right? No more.
I lived that.
Well, you're living this one now.
What I have for you, Sam, is this question about ownership. Because to me, a crucial element to building the World Championship Royals was them spending money that they had never spent before. Spending money, we found out that the Royals had spent like a total of $300,000 over a 15-year period in Latin America on players before Dayton Moore took over. Obviously, they changed that. That's how they got guys like Salvador Perez and Yordano Ventura and Kelvin Herrera for that World Series run. They spent more money in the draft on a year-by-year basis than anybody else until that rule was changed. Meanwhile, now, and I understand that that some of this is because Dayton Moore's signed some bad contracts that have probably left his owner unhappy, but in that World Series run, we don't regret the trades of acquiring Cueto and Zobrist. They got him a World Series, but they had to include cash because they weren't allowed to take on the extra payroll, which meant they had to give better prospects. This team wouldn't be as bad right now if they still had Sean Manaea, for example. If they'd been able to spend some money instead of give up one of their best pitching prospects, for example. And the reason I bring it up, Sam, is because now in this Herrera trade, we find out that money might have been as important as actually acquiring prospects. And I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on, I mean, how much is that causing this rebuild to be more painful now, maybe by not having, prospects they could have had, contributing here? And does it make their challenge more difficult if they aren't able to do what other teams do, which is eat a little bit of money in order to get better players in return?
I'm going to say this one time. Jake, you can mark the tape, and then that's it. Nate, good question.
Wow.
Never saying that again.
Yes, I think
I'm going to go ahead and take the rest of the day off.
You can have the week off, bud.
Bye.
Wow. Sweet.
Sam, please.
I think it's absolutely a factor. I think it's concerning. I think that you've heard me say this. I think that David Glass before 2006 was one of the worst owners in professional sports. I think that David Glass from 2006, almost from the moment he hired Dayton Moore, after he let Allard Baird hang in the wind when Allard Baird was the last person in baseball to know that he was fired, after that, David Glass from that moment to 2016-ish, was one of the better owners in sports. A model small money owner in Major League Baseball. He supported, overpaying draft picks like Will Myers is the example we always give. Supported huge expenditures in Latin America. We talk about Salvador Perez and Kelvin Herrera because they worked out. Noel Arguez was a guy that did not work out. They gave him $7.5 million. Look, it was wasted money as it turned out, but that's the kind of investment that I think you have to make when you're trying to build a winner. You bring up a lot of good points. That Herrera trade, I think, is concerning for the reason that you suggested, that they brought back, lesser talent in order to dump the salary. I believe that that had at least something to do with that trade being done 6 weeks before the trade deadline. Because if you're dumping the salary, you dump more of the salary on, you know, June 19th or whenever the deal was consummated than you would on July 30th. I absolutely believe that. I think that the financial restraints, and look, like, they were expecting to lose money with this team anyway because they knew it wouldn't be good and the payroll's a little bit higher than it should be for a team that's going to be bad. But the way the record has cratered, the way this team has just lost game after game after game, means they're even more in the red. And so I get, you know, there's a financial component. The Royals are a business just like 29 other teams, so I get that there's a financial component. But just from a purely baseball perspective, which is what we care about, right, absolutely ownership is hurting them. They got back less talent in the Herrera deal because they demanded that Washington take on the money. And you're smart, Nate, to bring up the Cueto and Zobrist. So the Royals have been on both sides of these trades now within a span of 3 years. And when they were the buyer, they were not going to take on any extra money, and they took less talent. And now that they're the seller, they're not keeping that money to get more talent in return. They're sort of, you know, losing on both ends of that in terms of, you know, talent for the future. And absolutely, that's a problem. How could it not be?
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like basically David Glass is here's your number for the year.
Yes.
Even if we're in contention for the playoffs, we're not going over that number. Your salary is your salary. And maybe I'll push it up a little bit if we're in contention, but if we're not in contention, you got to cut as much of that salary as possible to get us under a number. I mean, that seems to be the way they've operated.
Yes.
You know?
If we're going to be fair and honest here, there are times that Dayton Moore has done, you know, he has talked David Glass into spending more. You know, the payrolls have been higher than David Glass initially wanted many years, including 2015. 2016, but you know, there was also the Eric Hosmer. Dayton Moore wanted to sign Eric Hosmer. I forgot the exact numbers. I don't have them right in front of me. I have them in my notes, but a huge contract. And David Glass basically said, no, we're not going to do that. So there's an element of ownership, you know, sort of getting into baseball decisions that I don't think was there from 2006 to 2015. Maybe that's the nature of where they are right now. If you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, he was the owner of a world champion. But I do absolutely, with David Glass's track record, it is concerning, for sure.
And I understand it's only one pick, but if they truly want to replicate, or at least come close to replicating the success the first time around, when they do get the opportunity to pick, whether it's number one, number two, or number three, like they're going to next year, it's got to be Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas. It can't be Kyle Zimmer or Bubba Starling.
Yep.
And that's just the truth.
Yep, 100%.
They got to get a building block,
yep.
And they did. Twice with Moose and Haas, they don't win the World Series. They don't have that run without both those guys.
Yep. And you also have to fill it in on the back end, right? They got Kelvin Herrera for $50,000 or whatever. They got Greg Holland in, I think, the 10th round. But those first-round picks, you have to hit. You just do. You absolutely do.
Sam Ellinger, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Hopefully we'll see you Wednesday at Port Fonda.
Yeah.
And
my loud nephews.
Oh, you know what? Bring them.
I will.
This is one of the events. I like to bring my kids to events where they're encouraged to be loud. Right. You know what? Guess what? You want to be loud? Yeah. Here it is, baby. Yeah. Here's your wheelhouse. That's Sam Ellinger. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.